case number 7, and B, the Yovil versus the INS.
How do you like that pronunciation? I don't know it either.
May it please the court, my name is Stanley Horn. We represent the appellate in this case. This involves the question of whether or not there is a basis for the motion to vacate the order entered in absentia ordering the petitioner in this case to be deported. The basis of the motion to vacate the order of deportation was that she suffered exceptional circumstances by an illness. Now, normally, it's hard to determine what exceptional circumstances are or severe illness. Except in this case, we have guidelines set out by the Board of Immigration Appeals in matter of J-P- interim decision 3348. And in that decision, they said that severe headaches qualify as exceptional circumstances. Now, although I don't know from personal experience what a migraine is, I do have personal knowledge because my wife suffers from these illnesses. When you have a migraine headache, you are absolutely unable to function. That is clearly what happened in this case. As a result, the petitioner could not appear in a court for her deportation hearing and to apply for her asylum application and to prosecute her asylum application. Now, Section 240EI of the Immigration Naturalization Act is the basis of the exceptional circumstances which allow a motion to be filed to reopen the case. Although this section does not require anyone to do anything, in other words, if they are suffering from this illness, the section doesn't require them to do anything. In the board decision of JP, they engrafted certain requirements to be followed in order for someone to fall within the exceptional circumstances. The first requirement is that they corroborate the disability. Well, this was corroborated by the affidavit of the brother, which is in the record, on page number 78 of the record, where he filed an affidavit saying, one, that he tried to call the immigration service to tell her the illness, and that he took her to the doctor the day that the hearing took place. And two, it's corroborated by the doctor himself who said in his notes.
On the day that the hearing was to take place, the original hearing?
Yes, the original hearing was to take place on the day she suffered her...
No, I know, but how soon after that did she go to the doctor?
I think it was the same day. I believe it was the same day that she went to the doctor. And the doctor himself, he didn't define what migraine headaches are in medical terms, but he said in his record, in his note, which is on page 79 of the record, that she suffered from migraine headaches. Now, this is a medical opinion, and that's, again, what was required by JP. The third thing that the board required, although it's not either by statute or by regulation.
Well, what he also said is the patient is excused not to attend court on the 11-19, right?
Right. He's a doctor. He didn't know what the legal terms are. Now,
there's an intervening case called Yersfaci, decided after your brief was filed, in which we addressed a similar thing. The difference in that is that the physician only indicated that she had visited, didn't indicate any excuse from the...
Yes, in that case. But in this case, he does indicate that she suffered migraines. In the case that you're quoting, this court said that they required some kind of medical expertise. I'm not sure exactly what that meant, but... In this case, she said she suffered from migraine headaches. The third requirement that the board set forth was that there be some diligence by the person in advising the court that she couldn't appear. I'm not exactly sure what they meant by diligence, but I'm almost willing to say that if you could contact the immigration court here in Chicago by telephone and are successful, then she absolutely failed at her duty. It's beyond, no one can contact the immigration court unless you know how to do it. If you call the immigration service, if you call information, they don't have a phone number for the immigration court. If you call immigration and you finally get the 800 number after probably knows 10 or 20 times because it's always busy, they don't ever give you the number of the immigration court. They have they say you can push this number for forms and this number for information and so on, but there is no way that you could call the immigration court and advise them for some reason that you can't appear. The judge who handled the case said that they should appear in person. I'm not exactly sure, or communicate in person is the word that he used. I'm not sure exactly what he means. Does he mean that you have to call by telephone, that you have to go down there and tell him that you can't appear? Well, the brother who was doing all the communication at the time was taking her to the doctor. He couldn't both take her to the doctor and go down to the immigration court and communicate with the judge. First of all, they wouldn't let him in because they don't know who he is. He doesn't have a G20R appearance on file. And secondly, how is he going to know that he has to go down in person and communicate with the court? So there is, although she met the requirements as set forth by the board in its decision, it still was never considered. The final thing is that the board, in its eagerness to dismiss this motion, never, ever considered its own precedent in JP. Never. Nor did the immigration judge ever consider its own precedent in JP. They never discussed it. All they did was saying that she didn't meet her burden, and that was it, and dismissed the motion. Now, in deportation cases, when someone is going to be deported, it's obviously important enough to consider your own precedent and consider the factors that are involved when one tries to avoid a deportation. Because if she wasn't deported, she could at least get voluntary departure, would allow her to come back without any penalty. If she's deported, she can't come back for 10 years without special permission of the Immigration Service. It behooved the board to consider all the factors as pronounced in its own decision in order to determine the validity of the motion to reopen. And they never did that, even though she had met all her requirements. Therefore, they erred in failing to grant the motion to reopen.
May it please the court, I'm Mary Jane Kondo, representing the respondent in this matter, the United States Attorney General. Petitioner's counsel is correct. The sole question before the court today is whether the board abused its discretion when it concluded that the petitioner did not meet her burden to show that her migraine headache was an exceptional circumstance beyond her control that prevented her from appearing at her immigration court hearing. What's not at issue here today is the fact that she appeared at her initial hearing, at her calendar hearing. She was given warnings that she could be ordered deported in absentia if she failed to appear at her hearing. It's
uncontested. She failed to appear, though, because of an illness, isn't that right?
That's correct, Your Honor. She said that she came down with a migraine headache before, the night before her hearing, is what her affidavit and her brother's affidavit said. It's uncontested that she knew the date and time of her hearing, which was 9 o'clock in the morning, about 4 months after her initial hearing. Now, at the initial hearing, when she didn't show up, when her attorney had no explanation for her not being there, once the immigration judge was satisfied that she had proper notice of her hearing date, her individual hearing date, which was that day, and that it was had been established that, in fact, she was deportable, the immigration judge was required to order her deported in absentia. Now, Congress has set up this scheme in the statute about reopening in absentia orders, and frankly has made it, what Your Honor mentioned earlier, an uphill battle, mentioned in another case today. It's a difficult burden, and it is reviewed for abuse of discretion. Now, concerning the JP case from the board that petitioner's counsel was discussing. The fact is, in that case, the board did not hold that a severe headache, it was a severe headache at issue there. The board did not hold that that necessarily was an exceptional circumstance that would excuse a person from attending. What the board said, in fact, the board there said that the petitioner had not sustained his burden of proof. And then the board went on to say, however, assuming that that's enough, here is the evidentiary matters that we would like to see.
Call that severe and strong headache a common headache. Is a migraine a common headache?
I think it's, well, in what way do you mean common? Do you mean?
That's what I'm asking you. You quoted it in your brief. I think the brief's misleading on that point. Common headache, migraine is a common headache?
Well, I think that it's something common in the sense that it's not unusual. I mean, it's a lot of people suffer from migraines. The fact here, Your Honor, is that there's a failure of proof. What the petitioner said in her affidavit and in her brother's affidavit is that the day before, sometime in the evening before her hearing, she came down with a migraine headache. Her affidavit is at page 57. Her brother's affidavit is at page 78. Now, in petitioner's brief, he argues that it's clear that the migraine got worse overnight. It's not clear. In fact, there's no evidence in the record to show that. There is evidence in the record saying, the evidence that the petitioner put in on appeal to the board, saying that a migraine, quote, most often lasts for less than a day in two-thirds of people with a migraine.
Here you have a physician saying he saw the day of the hearing and said she shouldn't be in court that day.
Well, Your Honor,
I mean, you know, what else is she supposed to do?
Well, actually, what the doctor said, and that's on page 79 of the record, what he said, and it's a very cursory statement, petitioner is under my care. Patient came in my office November 1997, which was the hearing date, complaining of migraine headache and fever. And then he says the patient is excused not to attend the court date on November 1997. The doctor actually wrote the letter about a month later. Now, for one thing, it's not the doctor's judgment that's important here. The doctor doesn't know what the standard is. That's the immigration judge's decision and the board's decision. What the board has said of what they'd like to see and what's sufficient evidence in these matters, they look at the totality of the circumstances in each case, and they want to see specific, detailed medical evidence showing the cause, severity, and treatment. Now, in the case of a migraine, I don't think anyone really knows what the cause is. But what's lacking here is the severity and the treatment. In fact, the doctor in his note doesn't say she was suffering from a migraine. He says she's complaining of a migraine and a fever. He doesn't say what her condition is. He doesn't say whether...
Well, isn't there a reasonable inference to be drawn from the fact that she complained of migraine and he sought to excuse her from the hearing?
Well, as I said, Your Honor, it's not the doctor's judgment.
Well, I understand he doesn't know the legal standard for it, but, I mean, it's his patient. He doesn't believe she can attend, so he asks her to be excused. But I agree, he doesn't know the standard. But how far do you have to go with that? I mean, do you have to have a detailed medical examination to show to the immigration judge?
Yes, Your Honor. That's what the board has said in this matter. They want to see.
What has the board said? What's its exact language?
Well, they've said there are two cases, and it's matter of JP and matter of BAS. And they've said they look at the totality of the circumstances. They want to see specific, detailed medical evidence showing the cause, severity, cause and severity of the illness and the treatment provided.
Who's going to tell you what the cause of a migrating headache is?
Well, in that case, I would concede, Your Honor, that it's unknown.
Well, that's one of the tests.
But what's missing here is the severity of her headache and the treatment. It's under the evidence that is in the record, it does appear, certainly, the Attorney General hasn't made this conclusion, but it seems that in some cases a migraine...
You ought to read today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Pardon me?
You ought to read today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, a $12 million end on the Green Bay Packers. Has a migrating headache, he's had it for 3 days, they've been examining him, they can't determine the cause of it.
Well...
I don't know how you think this little doctor down here can.
Well, in a real life...
Calling a specialist.
Well, while I would concede, Your Honor, that they may not be able to establish the cause, it was the petitioner's burden here to show that she was unable to go to that hearing that day.
She called. She called and had her brother call and everybody else call, and they can't get an answer to talk to anybody.
But she had time. 2 months later, she filed her motion to reopen. And if during that time, she should have marshaled her evidence and put it together, showing that on that morning...
Would your answer be any different if she filed it 2 weeks later? Your argument?
Well, no, Your Honor.
No, I know it wouldn't.
I think that within... What I'm trying to say is that on that day, she didn't need to necessarily have the evidence. But during... She had 180 days, and any time... The board has said any time within that period is fine.
Would you think she should go back to the doctor again and say, now, I don't think that this will be sufficient. You had better do something else for me.
Yes, Your Honor. She was represented by counsel.
Is she assumed to know that law?
She's represented, Your Honor. And yes, she is, and her counsel is expected to know the law on this. The evidence also shows in the article the petitioner put in, an untreated attack usually lasts from about 4 to 72 hours.
This is evidence in opposition to the request to reopen?
No, Your Honor. This is evidence that the petitioner put in support of her appeal to the board. It's on page, that part is on page 11 of the record.
Does it talk about the severity and other aspects of a migraine headache in that evidence?
Yes.
And what does that say?
Well, it says that it varies. So that's my point. In some cases, it can be 4 hours. In some cases, 72 hours. And presumably, it can be more than that.
So we've got at least evidence, I assume, from some learned treatise that says that. Then we have a physician who said she reported with a migraine, and he asked to have her excused in the hearing. Now, what additional do you need from that?
Well, the question is whether she was disabled, whether she was unable to go to her hearing. And the fact is that clearly she wasn't.
What evidence did you submit that she was not able, that she should have been able to?
Well, the fact is, Your Honor, she was able to leave her house that day. She had her brother there. He took her to the doctor.
Yeah, I suppose you expect the doctor to come to her?
No, Your Honor. My point is that she could have gone to her hearing that morning. Presumably...
Being able to go to a doctor and being able to participate in a hearing with your future on the line are two different things.
Well,
she may well have been able, with the assistance of her brother, to get to a physician's office. That doesn't mean she could have participated in a hearing.
There's another point, Your Honor, and another part of the requirement that Congress has set out that we haven't discussed yet, and it has to be an exceptional circumstance beyond her control. Now, the immigration judge...
Well, a migrating headache isn't within her control.
That's correct, Your Honor. Whether she comes down...
Is this the kind of absence from a hearing that you expect... You want to come down on with no possible re-examination of?
You're talking about a migraine in general?
I'm just talking about in general, where you have a woman who claims to have a migraine headache, doesn't show up for the hearing, and by gosh, this is the kind of person we're really going to come down on. Right? That's who you want to get. It's not the people who just don't show up and skate. It's somebody that, like this. Is that the kind of person you want to hit hard?
No, Your Honor. The Congress has set out a difficult standard here. Certainly, it's a continuum.
Well, and that's why you're before a court, too, because we're supposed to make an interpretation of whether or not there was abuse of discretion in the immigration judge.
Right. And, Your Honor, the fact, simply because the board could have reached a different decision does not mean that the board abused its discretion here. The question is, if I may just finish my point. I see that my time is up.
Finish your point.
About the beyond control. It's certainly not beyond her control. It certainly is beyond her control whether she has a migraine or not. But what was within her control was whether she sought treatment. And the immigration judge pointed out she got that migraine headache 8 o'clock the evening before or sometime before that. That's the time her brother said he started to try to contact the attorney. And the immigration judge said she didn't seek immediate medical treatment. Presumably, or possibly, if she had, she would have been able to attend her hearing the next day.
She should have got it at 8 o'clock that night now, are you telling us?
Well, there's certainly...
And midnight?
There's emergency medical treatment available, Your Honor. I don't think there's...
So your view, though, is that the Department of Justice's view, this brief signed by an assistant attorney general, that the Congress of the United States wants a person thrown out of the country on this evidence.
On
this evidence.
Your Honor, the issue is...
Without any more opportunity to explain itself.
Well, she had sufficient opportunity to show that this was an exceptional circumstance,
Your
Honor, and she did not.
And put on an 24-hour answering service so that you can get it on your tapes.
The question is not whether she called in, Your Honor. It really comes to whether she demonstrated that this was a serious illness that was an exceptional circumstance, excusing her failure to appear.
Well, she can't if she can't get in touch with anybody.
She doesn't have to do it the same day, Your Honor. It needs to be done in her motion to reopen.
You just told me that she did it. What was it? 2 weeks later or 2 months later?
2 months later.
And she should have done it earlier. And then I asked you in return.
No.
Wait, let me finish, and then you go.
Sorry.
Then I asked you, I said, your answer would be the same if she'd have come in 2 weeks. Probably.
The point I was trying to make,
that was
and
your
I'm
answer.
Sorry if it wasn't clear. The point that I was trying to make is that she didn't need to marshal that evidence that day or the evening before her hearing or the day of her hearing. If she wasn't feeling well. The point is that she had 180 days, in fact, to marshal her evidence to show that this was an exceptional circumstance. That was my point, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We will thank both of you. We will proceed to case number 8, please. The United States I'm sorry. How much time is yet? Oh, I'm sorry. Come right up, then.
The only thing I would say is that the board never considered any evidence. They just summarily adopted the immigration judge's decision. Once the order of deportation was entered, it didn't matter how long she had to. There was an order of deportation. She could have gone down 5 hours later. The order was entered. She'd have to go through the same thing she did now. The board has an obligation to follow its own precedent.
Thank you. We will proceed.